It is March, and this is the Popmatic Podcast. I'm Brian, and joining me today are...
Greg.
I'm Amanda.
Bill.
Clint. Microphone wasn't on. Clint.
Can you hear me?
Clint. Too bad someone in the booth didn't fix that.
Clint is here in our million-dollar studio. The people that aren't here, they're not here.
We miss you.
So the latest Nashville Reads title has been announced. It's going to be programs all over the city. And the title is...
We are all completely beside ourselves. No, I thought you guys were going to join in there.
I couldn't think of the next word. Like, you broke it up, and I was like, what comes next?
Yeah, should have been a one-word. Should have been a one-word title like Dune. We are all completely beside ourselves by...
Karen.
Joy Fowler.
Oh, I was going to say Ray Fowler. See, I'd have gotten that wrong, too. I'm over. I'm reading it right now, too.
Yikes. So, we record early because we're pros. Honest, we're pros. Can't you tell that we're pros? So, it was just announced what the title is. So, we haven't read it yet. But the next podcast, we'll tell you. We'll do the Siskel and Ebert and tell you what we thought. But prominently in the story, there's a chimpanzee. And I could tell you the role of the chimpanzee in the story, but that would be a spoiler. But just in honor of We Are All Completely Beside Ourselves being the next Nashville Reads title, we're going to talk about our favorite books, movies, and music that feature animals. You know, the Pink Floyd album. No, other animals. Okay. So, but first, Bill's going to tell you about a movie at the library.
Yes. Please save a date for March 8th, because at the main library downtown, 615 Church Street at 2 p.m., we are going to show Report to the Commissioner. This is a sadly forgotten crime story from the 1970s. I love the tagline to this movie. No one knew she was an undercover policewoman, including the detective who shot her. It stars Michael Moriarty, Yaphet Kotto, and Susan Blakely. And if that was not enough, and it should be, we have an interview with the technical advisor on the film, ex-New York City police officer Randy Jurgensen, in our Legends of Film podcast. Fascinating interview. So once again, March 8th, 2 p.m., come to the downtown public library to see Report to the Commissioner.
I'm going to report to the Commissioner, as long as he's a nice guy.
And this is the one interview Amanda will listen to mine.
I was going to say, I was thinking that's the one I wanted to hear, so that's good.
I listened to them all.
Why? You're a fan of the...
He was telling me about the guy that when he was talking to him, it sounded really interesting. So
he is a character.
We should officially start.
Well, Brian said that we haven't read the book yet, but I think a couple of us have. I have part where it's in work in progress.
You're taking my plan and you're flushing it down the toilet.
No, it's a completely brilliant idea.
Actually, I'm right in the middle of the book too. We know things a little early because we work for the library. Because
we're cool. Sure. Like that. Okay.
Sure. The book's been out for a while. I did finish it. You can get it on Hoopla. I listened to it. It's a pretty good audiobook. I would recommend it. It has the virtue of it's always being there. You don't have to get on the whole list for that. The book deals a lot with psychology and animal behavior and animal cognition and mention of B.F. Skinner and Nim Chimpsky, who is a famous chimp who was a project of Columbia University. And we're going to be showing Project Nim throughout the month of March. So I wanted to talk about one of my favorite authors on animal behavior, who is Temple Grandin. I think a lot of people know who Temple Grandin is because there was a famous movie made about her starring Claire Danes that came out a few years ago. But I don't think a lot of people have read her books, and they're all really interesting. The one that I would recommend is Animals in Translation. If you don't know anything about Temple Grandin, she is an autistic woman, and she had a really interesting story. And she found a connection with animals pretty early on in her life, and that led her to make a lot of connections between her condition of autism and how animals perceive the world. And so she went on to kind of basically revolutionize the cattle industry and the meatpacking industry to make it much more humane. I really recommend her books. Animals in Translation is great, and I think it's a nice sort of segue into next month, which is National Autism Awareness Month.
So you mean March?
Because yes. It's yeah, well, I'm, you know, yeah. I'm okay. In the make-believe world.
Okay.
It would make a nice companion read to the National Reads book. So check it out.
I can't say that I have a favorite animal author, animal behavioral author.
Well, yeah. I guess I've read that many.
It's not been a topic that's come across my nightstand.
I'm trying to think, like, I mean, I would think that, you know, her books about animal communication are more like general interest nonfiction.
It's very anecdotal. Like, these are not, definitely not hard science books. She is a scientist in her own right, and so she brings a lot of that into play, along with a lot of her own experience and a lot of anecdotal stuff.
And what's the, you know, the title of her biopic?
I think this is called Temple Grandin.
And Claire Danes played her?
Yeah.
It was on HBO.
It's a good movie. Like, they do a really good job of getting the gist of her story.
Amanda.
Yes, Brian.
What you got?
Well, coming off the Olympics, being in Russia and having all this, you know, Russian music, and it only made sense that the piece I chose is Russian. So Sergei Prokofiev wrote Peter and the Wolf in 1936. And Prokofiev's life spanned so many political upheavals in Russia, because he was born in 1891. So that means he was there for the revolution and when they overthrew the Tsar, and then he went through World War I, then he went through World War II, and he had to deal with Stalin. And this piece was written during the later part of his career, specifically for children. And I can even remember when I was in first grade going down to Mr. Shirey's room. He was my music teacher. We went to Mr. Shirey's class, and he played Peter and the Wolf. And partially because it's set to a story, has seven basic characters. Each character has its own instrument and its own theme. Like, Peter is strings, and the bird is the flute, and the duck is the oboe, and the cat is the clarinet, and grandpa is the bassoon, and then the wolf comes out, and it's this big brass, and then the hunters come out after the wolf, and the big, you know, drums play, and so it very much is a musical story. There are, you know, lyrics, or they're not lyrics, they're words that a speaker usually speaks with it. Basic premise of the story, Peter's out playing with all of his animal friends. Grandpa comes out and says, come in, the wolf is coming. And Peter's like, no, it's fine. And Grandpa says, no, come. So Peter has to go in. The wolf comes, antics ensue, Peter saves the day. I will say, spoiler alert, somebody gets eaten, but I'm not telling you who it is. You'll just have to listen. Let's take a listen to, this is Peter's theme from Peter and the Wolf. And I don't really want to sing it for you, although I could, because it's totally in my head right now, so. Okay, so did that sound familiar? Probably to a lot of us it did. It's very popular in musical classes. Should have totally been used in Ice Dance instead of Tchaikovsky and Swan Lake. But anyway.
Fighting words.
I know, right? Throw down.
Ice MMA. Next Olympics.
I would watch that. You take your skate off and do some damage.
This is horrible.
So if you have not heard Peter and the Wolf, it's definitely one of those pieces everybody should hear. It's become such a ubiquitous part of the Western canon of music, but it is fairly Russian in just the way the story is told, especially with Grandpa being, you know, the big bassoon and all of that. So definitely take a listen to Prokofiev and then listen to it and figure out who gets eaten.
You told me that Melissa Joan Hart?
Oh, yeah, that's what I was going to say. So Brian was saying, well, David Bowie did a version of this. And if you look online, there's a ton of people that did versions. My favorite would have been Melissa Joan Hart reading Peter and the Wolf as Clarissa from Clarissa Explains It All, which was her big show on Nickelodeon in like 1994. So
what?
Yeah, you haven't really fully experienced Peter and the Wolf until Clarissa has explained it all to you.
I was going to say that Weird Al Yankovic did a version with synthesizers and he changed the...
Did he polka it too?
I think he probably did some polka.
Because it's not fun unless there's polka.
Absolutely.
What's happening on your farm, Bill?
Well, I remember this television special like it was yesterday. It was 1975. I was 15 years old in high school when Rikki Tikki Tavi was first shown. And let me explain, Rikki Tikki Tavi is an animated short based on Rudyard Kipling's short story that comes out of the Jungle Book stories. The story deals with a young mongoose that protects a British family from two murderous cobras. The animated special was narrated by none other than Orson Welles, and June Foray of Rocky and Bullwinkle fame did several of the voices, but the real star of the show is writer-director Chuck Jones. And for those of you who don't know who Chuck Jones is, he was the main guy at Warner Brothers Animation Department. He created Wile E. Coyote, Pepe Le Pew, Marvin the Martian, Roadrunner. He also enhanced the development of Bugs Bunny and Daffy Duck. Chuck Jones has been called the father of contemporary animation, and Rikki Tikki Tavi is especially well-directed and brilliantly conceived. So I'm highly recommending both the story and the animated short. And if you really want to see a real mongoose in action, go to YouTube and type in Cobra versus Mongoose. It's by National Geographic. And let me just say, it's pretty awesome.
I have to say, I read the story. Like, I know Rikki Tikki Tavi, but like, I didn't realize it was an animated TV movie.
Mm-hmm. I remember I should have brought up when, you know, I saw it in high school. I didn't think anybody else would see it or care any. That's all everybody talked about the next day. Yeah. I mean, it impressed a bunch of redneck teenage punks. So, you know, that was the main topic of discussion, how great it was.
And I think if I'm, spoiler alert again, somebody gets eaten. Do I remember the story correctly?
Yeah, there's some serious fight scenes.
Yeah,
and stuff.
Yeah. Uh-huh. So
I mean, it can be enjoyed by all adults. It was kind of funny. Crystal told me that she first saw it of all things on a 16mm at a church gathering. They showed it. So
is it like a weird style of animation?
Kind no,
of like?
Not at all. No,
it's pretty straightforward.
No, but it's very detailed, and the scenes are violent. So I'm very impressed by how he did that. Truly a master.
You know, Allison on our web team saw that you were going to talk about Rikki Tikki Tavi and Chuck Jones. She went crazy. So another big fan. So I'm going to talk about weasels, but not mongooses. Okay. I want to talk about Twin Peaks, the TV show. This was a TV show where Laura Palmer, the prom queen, gets murdered. And it kind of starts out as a police procedural, but then it becomes this battle for good and evil in this small town. And in a lot of ways, it was like this corny soap opera, and it was sort of a goofy parody, but then there were these bursts of surrealism and nightmares and dreams, and it was like, oh, it's funny and goofy, and that's weird and bizarre. So in this show, animals played a big role in the plot. So first is the pine weasel, which I thought was just a made-up animal, but actually it's actually the North American marten. I think it was the real pine weasel, that was a real animal. And in the show, Ben Horn, the sort of, you know, evil, scheming businessman, wants to stop a development. So he suddenly claims that he cares about the habitat of the pine weasel. But maybe more central to the plot is Waldo the Mina Bird, who actually is a material witness to Laura's murder, even though he's just a bird. And I don't want to give anything away, but the bird, you know, he's a Mina Bird, and he mimics human speech, and he keeps saying, Leo, no! Leo, no! Now, he is a material witness, and that puts Waldo in danger. But perhaps most importantly, the animal most associated with Twin Peaks are owls. Because the owls in Twin Peaks are actually these harbingers for the demons and angels and spirit beings that live in the White Lodge or the Black Lodge. And what you learn out through the course of the show, and this is kind of a big spoiler, is that like where Twin Peaks is, it's actually a gateway to the spirit world. And if you're in Twin Peaks and you see an owl, just you're done for. It's too much. You just want to avoid that. Why I'm talking about Twin Peaks now, other than the fact that owls and Twin Peaks are really cool, for Twin Peaks fans, now is actually a really important time. So in the very last episode of Twin Peaks, which is probably the coolest piece of television that was ever on broadcast TV, the ghost of Laura Palmer tells Dale Cooper, the FBI agent who's investigating her murder, they're actually stuck in the Black Lodge, kind of like hell, and she tells him, I'll see you in 25 years. Well, the in-show date is March 25th, 1989. So 25 years later is this March 25th. So Twin Peaks fans are going crazy. They're wondering what's going to happen. Is Laura Palmer going to come back for the dead? Hey, listen, Trekkies, calm down. It's just a TV show. For sure, what's going to happen in March is that Twin Peaks is going to come out on Blu-ray. And this is the pilot episode of Twin Peaks is actually a feature-length movie directed by David Lynch. I've heard he's a famous film director. I don't know anything about him. And then the whole series, and then Fire Walk With Me, which was a prequel film that was actually shown in theaters after the TV show was canceled. Now, one of the things about Twin Peaks is that actually time in Twin Peaks is actually circular. It's not, time in Twin Peaks isn't linear. So even though it actually is a prequel, it's also the epilogue to the series at the same time. Or it can be, depending on how you want to read it. So for sure, all of that is going to be in the Twin Peaks Blu-ray, and maybe deleted scenes from the Twin Peaks Fire Walk With Me movie, which for years have been tied up in legal red tape and they've never been released. But of course, all the David Lynch and the Twin Peaks fans are just hoping that there's going to be a new movie or a new show or secret footage they haven't seen before. But who knows? We'll find out. All I know is the owls are not what they seem. And also, if you want to see how I'm talking about the last episode, Twin Peaks is on Hulu and you can stream it for free, but I think you have to have Hulu Plus to watch it in high def. But if you want to go right to season 2, episode 22, that was the last episode. Just the coolest thing, most bizarre thing that was ever on TV. It doesn't matter if you don't know what's happening.
Telling people to skip to the end?
You can watch the whole thing. Wow. And then also, like, Amanda, there's a couple times I've been like, you can watch that, it's not scary. Like, Aliens? Aliens? Such a good movie. High tension, action thriller, kind of scary, I guess. Maybe if you're a kid, you know. Twin Peaks, scary, for real.
Yeah, like, I never wanted to watch Twin Peaks.
Ray Wise as Leland Palmer, the scariest character I've ever seen on TV. The evilest thing I've ever seen.
That's scary right, like, there. I'm done right, like, there. You've watched some, like, weird stuff.
So scary. And you know what's great, too? Everything that they do in Twin Peaks, they don't do any special effects. There's a fades. There's some reverse talking.
Which is real, right? The actor can actually do that.
One or two of the actors, they say things in reverse and then they play it forward to get his speech, like when they're in the dream world. But clearly some of the actors couldn't do that, so they didn't do that. So scary. You have nightmares. But it's funny though, Twin Peaks.
I'm already a little traumatized.
some of it, you know, is a little, you know, just fun and goofy and, oh, I like this. And then it's like, whoa, what the heck is happening? And of course, that's what Twin Peaks fans love. And then you never think about owls the same way again either. You're never going to watch Mr. Rogers. It's not going to be cool.
I never trusted them to begin with.
Anybody Twin Peaks fans?
Yes, I watched it when it was on. Awesome. And that pilot was just one of the greatest 2 hours of television ever. That scene where they find out Laura Palmer, you know, in the classroom.
Yeah.
And that was just freaking brilliant.
Yeah.
I look over at the desk and the girl outside runs by screaming. I mean, that was just, it just set it all up. That was just freaking great.
What channel was Twin Peaks on?
It was on ABC.
ABC. Yeah,
network. But it's on Hulu now. And I think maybe, I mean, I'm talking about, you can get it on Hulu, right? The library has the whole set. We have Fire Walk with Me Too on DVD. But so, like, that pilot episode and all of the episodes that were on, and including the log lady introductions. There's a woman who carries around a log, has the spirit of her dead husband. What's the... I mean, haven't I teased you enough that this is awesome? Okay.
You mentioned Library Pete earlier. He's local... library rock star. Apparently he's on the cover of Midwest Tapes catalog.
For real?
Yeah.
That's awesome. Yeah. That's like guaranteed sales.
I know.
Yeah.
He's pretty excited about it. Yeah. Good NPL exposure, too.
Congrats, Library Pete. That's library stuff. Midwest Tape, anyway. Yeah. I don't know how many, like... So Midwest Tape is one of these vendors. Like, okay, this is for patrons. Institutions like libraries buy from. You're on the cover. That guarantees some sales.
Yeah, it's like by far the biggest distributor. We're doing... Tickle my fancy?
Sure, yeah.
All right. What the heck?
So I found out about this awesome company. Apparently they've been around for a while, but they're called BookTrack, and you can find them at booktrack.com. And basically the idea is that it's an ebook, and as you're reading, it provides you a soundtrack as well as ambient noise, sound effects, all that good stuff, you know, so you hear a cock crow and all that stuff at the appropriate time. And they do this through a pretty sleek little mechanism. It's like a cursor where you can kind of like follow along with it, or you can just set the pace of your reading. You know, if it's going too fast, then you can slow it down with these just two little buttons. The book, short of the change in format, hasn't really undergone many changes since its inception, and this is a pretty major one. And I actually had this idea when I was 12 years old, and I was like, you know, I'm a genius. I'm going to, like, make so much money. And finally, I didn't do anything with it, and now it's a thing. So right now, they just have, like, pretty... like classics, like public domain stuff, like Sherlock Holmes and Huck Finn and stuff like that. But I think that they're going to start making it so that authors can sort of score their own books.
Mm-hmm.
They'll provide built-in sound effects.
Give your book the Wes Anderson treatment.
Yeah, I was wondering, what do you guys think about that? Is that going too far?
I'm cool with that. I mean, I wouldn't like it if the book track format is a proprietary format and you have to have the book track reader to... read or experience book track books?
At this point, it's free.
That's free?
Yeah.
Oh, that's cool. I like that. I mean, I'm all cool with them having a business model, but it was, as a librarian, this is just me talking. I want it all to be open and shareable, even if they have a monetized model, right?
Sure. It'd be interesting if this started to sneak its way into our OverDrive system that we have here at the library.
Yeah.
I think that would bug me. I mean, I thought audiobooks would bug me, and they don't, so maybe I could be wrong. But, like, I just think if I'm reading a book, I'm so used to reading a book, like, it's in my head. I don't need external roosters crowing at me and trains coming at me.
Right. But you still have all the visuals that are going on in your head.
I guess. I don't know. I have to try.
And you still have your own voice, which is going on. I don't really like audiobooks that much because I like doing things with the voice in my head, but this is a compromise of sorts.
Yeah, if you listen to the voice, you don't want to make the voice that's in your head angry.
They're always angry.
I thought... Instead of Freudian slip, you seem pretty mellow.
Self-control.
All ruse.
So just other things you can get to the library that are kind of similar is, like, we still have, like, BBC radio shows and stuff, and it seems like in the UK they're, like, way more open to that. Like, doing an old-school audio radio program, like, with sound effects and a cast.
Which I hate.
You hate those?
Yeah, yeah.
Do you hate those for real?
I think it's more the voices that I object to.
Yeah, yeah. I feel that. And then... I hang out in truck stops a lot, you know.
Because there's just so many in downtown Nashville, you know.
Well, you know, it was after, you know, the governor got elected. I was like, I need to see what he's about. Started hanging out in pilot, you know, truck stops. But so actually, you know, the First Lady has some really cool literary outreach programs. But if you go to, like, truck stops, they sell audiobooks there, but they're not the same audiobooks that you get at the bookstore or in libraries. They're like... a movie in your mind, constant action, you know? They're obviously, like, marketed towards truckers. And at least once I've had patrons call and ask, like, do you have those? And collection development people are like, oh, you know, the ones that are out there in that format, like, we have at the library. They're just not marketed the same way. So I just thought that was always fascinating that not to stereotype, but, like, some people who maybe wouldn't go to the library to get audiobooks, but they're marketing directly to them, like, in a different way.
Probably want those kind of noises when you're driving a truck. Late at night anyway, keep you awake.
I have had truckers come and ask for books, but, you know, because we work at the library, I think we're sort of plugged in, like, behind the scenes for the book media marketing spiel that the public doesn't usually see. It's just interesting to see a completely different version of it at a truck stop and, you know, how they're marketing and with what.
Toots.
You know.
Toots my goats.
So, like, you know.
I don't know what that means. I just saw Terrence Malick say it on TV one time. James Earl Jones.
Yeah, that's enough.
Wait, Terrence Malick, the film director? What?
Who is it? Am I getting his name
wrong? Oh, yeah, wait.
Who's the guy with James Earl Jones on those stupid, like, phone commercials?
Malcolm McDowell.
Is it Malcolm McDowell?
Uh-huh.
Okay.
Clockwork.
Oh, yeah, it is. Yeah, it is. You're right. I'm sorry.
Terrence Malick's Tree of Life and...
He would never be on a commercial.
So Mike
made a mistake last time. This one, I will admit that
you're going to make a mistake.
We're all good.
That's probably, like, these two guys, one of the favorite movie makers. So.
What, Terrence Malick was Frosty the Snowman?
There you go. He was.
So I think you're next.
Speaking of Frosty the Snowman, briefly want to talk about weather because it's springtime. Actually, as we're filming this, I think Greg mentioned that we filmed this early, so that's not a spoiler alert. It's severe weather week, so I always enjoy this time of year when the rain comes back and it gets all stormy and fun, and as long as I don't get caught on the bridge like I did last year, it'll be all good. So just be aware. It might thunder and lightning. Apparently, we might have had some last night, but I slept through it because it was late in the night, and that was sad, but... Severe weather week, severe weather coming up. March is usually a good time for that. So that's tickling my fancy right now.
I dig it.
I'm very tickled.
Off the cuff, your best weather-related movie.
That's hard, because off the cuff I would say Twister, but we've already talked about how it's not good.
I was just wondering if I put you on the spot. Best weather book, off the cuff.
Reed Timmer has one. It's a nonfiction book. I can't think of what it's called, but he's a storm chaser. There's also one by... Warren Finley, I think he's an old school chaser. He's got, like, a photo book that's really cool too. I can't think of what it's called. We can look it up and put it in the show notes because I've got it in my Goodreads account. Awesome.
I'm pro thunderstorm, anti tornado.
Fair.
You were telling us about your elementary school music teacher.
Mm-hmm.
My elementary school was destroyed by a tornado.
Ugh.
But I'm a hillbilly, so anyway.
Well, my lucky, my tick. Okay, stop. my
fired.
What's tickling my fancy is what we have here at the library is called the Lucky Day Collection. Now, how would you like the latest books without the long wait time? If you go to the Popular Materials Department, the main library, or Hermitage, Green Hills, Thompson Lane, Hadley Park, Goodlettsville, you just might find the latest Robin Cook that I found, or J.A. Jantz, or Laura Littman, and I even saw the latest Tom Clancy down there. And this is how the Lucky Day Collection works. You can't hold them. There's no holds. It's first come, first serve. And you have to come to the library, one of those libraries, to see what we have. And once you find your book, it's only a 14-day checkout. Not 3 weeks, 14 days. And you cannot renew them, so don't come whining to me that you need more time because I'm not going to give it to you. I can't give it to you.
Getting rowdy, like I
said. Like I said, it's first come, first serve. It's pretty neat. It's a pilot. Just started this program, and it looks like it's going to be a keeper. So just wanted to let more people know about it. And the quality of books, seriously, folks, is quite good. A lot of variety of titles. So if you go to those branches, check it out. No telling what you might find. That's why it's called the Lucky Day Collections.
Yeah, we've been doing this for about a month, and I finally just yesterday got lucky with a book. Like, I found one that I, J.D. Robb, her new book. Thank you, Craig, for laughing.
And I found a Robin Cook.
In one sentence, right, you can subvert the hold list, right, with the Lucky Day Collections.
So which we've all secretly wanted to do for a long time.
These are the most popular books, right, with the longest
like hundreds of
with
holds.
The longest holds list. You can come in and get one for 2 weeks.
You have to come in. Don't be calling me asking me what's on the Lucky Day Collection.
Yeah, so that's, we can't do that. We'll get our library fingers cut off.
I don't want to do that. That's scary. They could probably make a Twin Peaks episode out of it, though, with the owls.
So one of the interesting kind of things that happened in Twin Peaks is on TV, you know, it's TV, so it can't get real explicit. And what a lot of people didn't like about the Fire Walk With Me movie in theaters was that it was really explicit. It was all the stuff that was just hinted at in the TV show was really explicit. And I think the TV show is kind of like the surreal soap opera or a surreal parody of a soap opera. And then the Twin Peaks Fire Walk With Me movie was more like a horror film. I don't know if people like that. But now that there's been so much time that has passed, I think all Twin Peaks fans just view the TV series and the movie and the books that tie in with it as one thing. So there are tie-in books and tie-in audiobooks with the show, and it's just like one body of work. And since you got me back on this, just a shout-out. Of all the fandoms I've been involved with, the best, coolest, most gnarly fan art are like the Twin Peaks fan art. It's just like so cool. I love it. That's a shout out to the Twin Peaks fan community.
Firefly's better.
Well, you know, that actually is a really good analogy because Firefly was a TV show that was on for so long, and then there was a theatrical movie afterwards.
Yeah, that's true.
Right? And Twin Peaks was the same.
See, that's why I asked what Twin Peaks was on, because Firefly was on Fox and they messed it up. So I wondered if Twin Peaks, like, if they were lucky enough to be on a good network that actually, otherwise it would have made no sense if they'd have played the episode out of order. And
what happened with Twin Peaks was the initial plot that was kind of put in motion in the pilot episode that Bill talked about was Laura Palmer was murdered, and then in the middle of the second season they solve that murder. And like I said, it's kind of a parody of a soap opera, so like how long could you drag this out? How long could you build it up? And so after that happened, the show had to find a new direction, and it totally became this weird battle between good and evil, and there's owls that guard a portal to the netherworld, and that was different, I think, than a lot of people who wanted, like, who killed the prom queen. But like I said, I think now the people that are still into Twin Peaks and were hardcore fans even after the show lost ratings at the end of the second season just view it as one whole big thing.
But the TV show had, like, some closure to it, right? It wasn't like Firefly where it's just like, oh, bandit's over.
Yeah, no, it was left you hanging.
Well, they did that. You said, like, the epilogue prequel.
The show actually ends completely open-ended. The show was so popular, and then the ratings just completely dropped off. So that I think the creative people behind the show were like, well, let's just do whatever we want. And that most of that last episode happens inside the dream world. It has the best, scariest ending of any show ever. A lot of people think at the time were unsatisfied. Like, how could you leave this huge cliffhanger? And actually, when you look back at, like, how series TV has gone, where, like, they always botch the ending, it never ends right. Like, how do you bring closure to a show? Twin Peaks now actually plays more like a British TV show that actually has, like, a really short, tight run, and then it stops. in my personal email, not even in my work, just the excoriating email that we made a mistake in the last podcast. And I wonder how this person even got my personal email. Like, how did I? That still is freaking me out.
Sorry.
Okay. In Rudolph the Red-Nosed Reindeer, Burl Ives played Sam the Snowman, not Frosty the Snowman.
Oh.
So.
The nightmare.
Pop Matt. Information professional fail.
It's no recovering from that. So,
that never happens.
Rarely. In 1969, the Frosty the Snowman cartoon, Frosty was voiced by Jackie Vernon.
I was negative 10.
So, Mike, if you're out there listening again, Jackie Vernon, Frosty the Snowman, 1969. Hey, if you want more information, where can you go?
www.nashvillelibrary.
Oh,
can we do that part over again?
Are you going to Nashville or are you in Nashville already going to the library? Think about it that way.
www.library.nashville.org.